just after 2 minutes to 9 o'clock on Siren FM. Of course, in Lincoln and, of course, in the British Isles, Jane Southall. Getting you in the Elton John mood for tomorrow, of course.
Yeah, we're jigging on my seat here now.
See, when you're the show director of the Lincolnshire Showground and the Lincolnshire Agriculture Society, it's magic things happen. Of course, if you really wanted to actually get even more excited, you can actually say, in addition to Elton John, we've got the fabulous Christine Webber back on the show. Christine, how are you?
I'm terrific and so delighted you invited me back. Thank you very much.
Always a delight, Christine. And I realise, actually, you know, there's a typographical error in the running order. We'd actually put it down as Christine Webster. No, it's Christine Webber. There's only one Christine Webber, ace author, psychotherapist extraordinaire. And indeed, I say ace author because the latest text, which is going to be the number one classic book of the world, will of course be Who'd Have Thought It. We're going to be talking about that and more after the news. Jane, hopefully you'll be around for a few moments to actually do that. Eva MacDonald is back with us. How are you, Eva?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Very important because, once again, celebrating Eva, not just one job, two jobs. East Midlands Ambassador for the National Citizen Service and more. In the next hour, as well as Christine Webber, we've probably got the delights of William Sitwell. We've also got the fascinating, wonderful world of the Stig, talking about how you should actually deal with car sales from both ends, whether you're selling or whether you're purchasing cars. Very important from that point of view. And Dr. Pixie McKenna will be talking about how to actually cope with hay fever. Always critical. So it's nice to hear it too. But as I say, Christine is with us. You're going to be kind enough to wait until after the news, Christine, to share with us all.
Absolutely, yes.
Splendid,
definitely.
Because the news is coming up literally in a matter of seconds from now.
The latest news and sport on Siren 107.3 FM.
Indeed, and the highs today, highs of 19 degrees centigrade, lows of 13 degrees centigrade, the early cloud and mist, which is pretty much going as we speak, will clear to leave another warm day with sunshine.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent. Jane, before you head off into the wild blue yonder to actually deal with all the coordinating things of the Elton John concert and indeed the upcoming Lincolnshire show that's actually there, don't sure whether Christine Webber's actually ever been to the Lincolnshire show. Christine, have you actually had that experience?
No, actually. When I was at Anglia, we used to do, it seemed like an endless run of shows, you know, Suffolk, Essex, Norfolk, and the east of England, but we didn't quite go into your, you know, patch, so we didn't do the Lincolnshire show, which I'm sure would have been lovely and probably a very friendly show compared with some of the huge ones that there are, you know.
Yeah, it's large and perfectly formed in many ways, the Lincolnshire show.
It's everything.
Indeed. So I think, you know, clearly the campaign now to get the Dexter, the wonderful Christine Webber and family up for the 2017 Lincolnshire show, it starts.
It starts
in earnest.
All right. Well, that's we'll look at the diaries. That sounds good to me.
Excellent. Christine, as we mentioned, a whole range. I mean, clearly you have written extensively 12 non-fiction books, including How to Mend a Broken Heart and, of course, Get the Happiness Habit, which I think is very important because if we want any habit at all, we need to be happy.
That's a good one, yeah.
Very good. but you've actually moved into this whole notion of writing fiction again with this classic Who'd Have Thought It, which already, if we go to christinewebber.com, we can actually see the cover is looking marvellous. You've got a wonderful lady there with a cyclist, so it's nice and eco-friendly here, Christine. It's good. You know, no gas guzzling, polluting images that's actually there.
She does her best with the old recycling and everything, yes.
Exactly. And the whole notion of, as you said yourself, Christine, midlife women are fascinating. Now, clearly, Jane is about 30 years away from that sort of midlife scenario. And Eva, well, I don't know. It could be tomorrow.
I'm
who knows from that perspective. But in terms of this, the joys of, in fact, too young to get old, which was where back in 2010 you addressed the whole notion of female baby boomers.
Yeah.
This is kind of, you're synthesising a mixture of your practical expertise, etc., into a work of fiction. Share with us, who'd have thought it? What's it about?
Well, you're so right. I think everything I've been doing has kind of led into and fed into this. Certainly when I wrote Too Young to Get Old, I spoke to so many fascinating women from age about 45 through to, you know, really quite elderly. And there was too much I could, you know, for me to put in the book. But a lot of it stayed with me. And And one of the things that did stay with me, as a result of writing that book, one day I was invited onto BBC Breakfast to talk about something called SWOFTIs, single women over 50. Now, I had never heard of this. It was actually an acronym that the Department for Work and Pensions had put together, and it was to represent a whole group of women who find themselves newly single, whether by choice or not, in their 50s. And instead of sort of going quietly into the night, you know, they're all out there wearing colourful clothes, having a great time, and the Department for Work and Pensions was rather concerned that they weren't thinking about pensions or the future or anything else. So I was brought on to Breakfast Television to talk about this, and I kind of filed it away and thought, you know, that would be a great novel. And I had written a novel years and years ago, 29 years ago, in fact, when I was at Anglia Television. And it had done quite well in the Anglia region in particular. But, you know, life intervened, in, as you say, a lot of non-fiction books later. But I thought, I'm just going to get back to telling stories. And so this is it.
Jane.
Yes. Well, I could be under that bracket.
Well, I know.
So I think I need to read the book, don't I?
Swofties, though. Swofties. Extraordinary. You know, just a whole range of things. Any points or questions you'd like to put to Christine about life, the universe, how she actually copes with actually, you know, being based in Brighton, coordinating all sorts of other things, the news television presenter, etc., and the Harley Street practice. Basically, she is a Renaissance woman, let's face it, much like yourself.
Thank you. Hi, Christine. I think really just looking at the notes that we've got together about you, which is great, and then things that you've done doing the news presenting, and also to be a physiotherapist and an author.
Or even psychotherapist,
Or a psychotherapist. You know, probably. Well, in your case, Alex, we probably need to do that.
Thank you, Jane.
But I just wondered, what do you enjoy the most? Is it the writing, or what do you like the most? I mean, it's quite diverse what you do.
Yeah,
doesn't it, really?
you're absolutely right. I think I quite enjoy doing whatever I'm doing at the time.
Right.
I think that's a good thing. But I suppose if I had to really nail my colours to the mast, I would say that broadcasting is what I like most, because, you know, I have many years trying to find a career. You know, I trained as a singer, and then. I went into light music and a bit of acting and a bit of this and a bit of that, and I seemed to be travelling up and down the country in a suitcase, and it wasn't very satisfactory. And then I eventually found my way into television, where I first of all became a continuity announcer and then a news presenter. And do you know the relief, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will sympathise with this, the relief when you find something you really want to do that also other people think you're good at is one of life's most magical moments, you know. So that's really why I stayed in that for 12 years, which was a long time. But by then, I think I was approaching midlife. No, I wasn't, but I was 40. And I was, after 12 years there, I was thinking they will replace me with a younger model. So I began to branch out and do other things. And so I chose to go. But I still really get a thrill from, you know, an interview like this, or doing a bit of broadcasting for somebody, because there's something about it's got to be right now, you know, isn't it? It's a sort of, there's a sort of frisson about it, and it's rather exciting.
And the countdown, of course, to the release of the book, a mere 24 hours to go.
Oh, right, okay.
24 English hours before the book is released to the world.
Yeah.
It goes out there. Be too late then, Christine. He's like a child you have to just set free.
You're so right. And if it falls over, I can't do anything about it.
It'll be fine. I know it will be fine. Because we'll be doing...
Well, I tell you what, it'll be fine if they sort it out on Amazon, because it was up there for pre-order in the paperback and it's just disappeared from view. But I think it's because they're restocking, because it has sold quite well.
Oh, that's really good,
So it's sort of good, but if anybody, but anyway,
if anyone looks on Amazon and can't find it,
it'll
panic.
Be there tomorrow. But bookshops will have it, because it's going to be properly distributed. And if they haven't, any bookshop, you know, nowadays the great thing with technology is if somebody says, "I like this book," you know, then a bookshop can get it within 2 days, because it's just, you know, they click on a barcode, don't they? Now it's all very high tech, so yeah.
It's all wondrous stuff, and I have to say, having seen the sort of preview, even though it's probably not aimed at me, it has to be said, in terms of the sort of target audience.
Look like a middle-aged single woman, are you?
Thank you, Jane. It's nice to see that we don't sort of, you know, go through stereotypes, you know, in force from that perspective. It's well-written, as I'd expect, and I think I'm looking forward to reading the whole thing and savouring it, and then do a postscript. Eva, any thoughts from yourself?
Well,
was just reading about the book and things. What was it that actually got you into writing in the first place? Or was it just something that you fancied doing? And it just
yes, I think, yeah, like a lot of people, I thought, you know, I would like to write. And I, as I say, I wrote this novel, when, my first one, when I was at Anglia Television. But that was very largely, as I think most people's first novels are, you know, quite autobiographical, whereas this isn't at all. Although I can just see elements of people that I have known drifting into it amongst the characters and the places, because it's very largely set in Cambridgeshire and I lived there for a while. But I think with this particular book, what really has come out for me about talking to midlife women is how often they say, isn't it, you know, I thought it would all have calmed down by now. You know, life is so hectic and I don't know what's happening. And it's that sort of sense of, oh, my goodness, you know, I thought everything would be settled by now. That I just wanted to capture that because it seems to be a common experience for so many of us.
It does. I think your priorities change. They're your children have grown up. My children have grown up. I've got a fantastic job, but it can be all-consuming. So different things change. So, yeah, you don't. Yes. Sometimes you think, stop the bus, I need to get off.
I know. Well, it's exactly... That is the thread that runs right through this book, because I think it is just something that's common to all of us, really. And, of course, we are having a very different sort of mid-life compared with, say, our mothers. You know, we've changed a great deal because of the opportunities we've had. So I think that reflects in, you know, the turbulence of midlife. So you're dealing with your adult children on one hand because they still need your help. You've probably got aging parents at the other end. You've got a career.
Yeah.
And then maybe, you know, your husband walks out or gets ill or friends, in fact, get ill. And things keep changing that you had thought were in place for good, and suddenly they're not. And that's really, I think, something that we're all finding, isn't it?
It's wondrous. So we've just actually sort of been joined by another fine and tremendously talented individual. The wonderful Lucy Laville is coming in to join us. Lucy is a fabulous academic from the joys of Leeds Met University, and we'll be sharing a few thoughts with her. Jane, I think we have to say happy trails to you, good sir.
We do, yes, thank you. And I will definitely buy the book and read it.
You see?
Well, good luck, especially with Elton John.
Thank you. My goodness.
Wow. I don't know, Christine. I think some choosing between Elton John and your good self, clearly, Christine, you win every time.
I don't think so.
very critical. Jane will say farewell. A quick reminder, it's 12 days, 13 hours, 17 minutes and 9 seconds until the Lincolnshire Show takes off this year. I don't think, Lucy, have you ever been to the Lincolnshire Show?
I haven't, no. It sounds like a tremendous event, though.
It is truly wonderful. It's almost worth returning to Lincoln just for the Lincolnshire Show.
Is.
So tremendous stuff there. Christine, if you'd be kind enough to stay with us, a quick reminder with respect to Lucy Laville, senior lecturer at Leeds Metropolitan University, co-author of Developing Your PR Skills. Yeah, absolutely. Published in the Sunday Times Creating Success series, and generally just an all-round wonderful person. We sort of were talking last night. Lucy's actually here on business, as we are, in terms of external examining work. Can't say anything more than that, but Lucy is having her first ever experience of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Right.
Jane. So what can Lucy look forward to in the sort of rain things?
Alex.
Fine. Okay. That's great stuff. We're going to take a short musical break, Christine. We'll be back with you in a few moments to again sort of flag up a whole range of other factors as well. Any particular tune you'd like us to go for, Christine?
Oh, gosh, no, now you've really put me on the spot. Oh. No, surprise me, go on.
You want to surprise me? Jane, anything for... I mean, we've had the Elton John theme, obviously, because Elton coming to... I mean, it's a very, very important week. I mean, a week in which Lucy Laville and Elton John in Lincoln in the same week.
I know,
don't know.
We could have another Elton one, or we could have, I don't know, if you've got M People Pride, because I think we're proud of what we've achieved at the show grant.
That's very good. I like what we've actually done from that point. We've got moving on up. I mean, is that a sort of line from that?
Yeah, go on then. We're moving on up. Elton John,
we'll
where are we going
there.
To next? Yeah.
It's 9:15 on Thursday, June the 29th. June the 9th. Sorry, time.
29th, the show's finished, Alex, and
Thank
I missed
you.
It.
Very confusing.
Very quickly.
Ah, wondrous stuff. And people, moving on up. And Lucy LaVille, welcome to the production. I was briefly scanning through the fabulous CV of Christine Webber there. Christine, you're still with us, hopefully?
With you, yeah.
Good, marvellous. Sometimes I think Brighton must be just a font of wonderful, exciting media routine, because obviously in the Webber household, there's also, of course, David Delvin as well, your husband, who's...
Yes, oh, there is, yes.
It's like media doctors and media psychotherapists in every sense of the word from that line.
I know, what fun.
In fact, actually, Christine, you can almost turn interviewee now, or interviewer for the moment.
Right.
Would you like to put a few questions to the wonderful Lucy LaVille, who, anyway, Lucy LaVille sounds like a superhero. Lois Lane, Lucy LaVille.
I'm sure people are very disappointed when they actually meet me, but it does sound... It is a nice name, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a lovely name, isn't it? So that's my first question. Is that your own name?
Well, no, I actually, it's my married name, so it just flowed so well. And as I was saying to Alex last night, when we got married, it was when... 101 Dalmatians was the new film with Glenn Close, and Cruella de Vil was this very ugly character. And I just thought, wow, it just sounded a little bit like that, actually, reminded me of that.
But, yeah, but a nice version of that.
Yes, I hope so, yes.
A Lucy LaVille could never be, you know, a cruel lady. I don't think so.
I would hope not when she looks at some of our scripts that have come through. It's always critical from that perspective. Lucy, public relations. I mean, we're, in a sense, what we're doing with Christine these days. In fact, the first time we actually met Christine was over a kind of public relations brief for, I think you were in a studio in London doing a sort of down the line piece. So
yes, it certainly was. Probably making some erudite psychological comment on something. That was. I hope it was good anyway.
And I mean, Lucy, we were talking about how the PR industry has developed over the years, and probably in the main for the better, would you say?
Yeah, I hope so. Yes, I mean, the fact that there are so many PR degrees available for people to understand the value of public relations and how powerful it can be, but also to do it properly and ethically. You know, we do get some negative press. I think journalists are
we won't talk about Mr. Clifford.
A little critical. No, absolutely. But no, there are some wonderful professions that you can get through a PR career and a PR degree. So, and I'm sure, you know, having Christine on the show is good publicity for the work that you're doing, Christine, and helps to spread the word, doesn't it? Which is really what public relations is about.
Well, absolutely. And I think with the people that I often work with in terms of maybe a survey that's been, you know, quite academically researched and validated, but you then want to get that work that you've done out into the public domain, good PR people really understand about how you can do that, and they bridge the gap, don't they, between academic research, which has been perhaps long-term and very involved, and a PR person is able to kind of take the bare bones of that and express it in ways that the rest of us can understand. And that's a very valuable skill, actually.
Absolutely, yeah. There's an awful lot of complexity to unravelling and making it as accessible to as many people as possible with sometimes very complex messages, yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully we get there in the end. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing. As we said, a matter of, well, less than 24 hours now before your book is released into the wild. A final plug for it. Today at least, Christine, it is, of course, entitled...
Who'd Have Thought It?
Who'd Have Thought It, yeah. Amazing, well worth accessing. We look forward to speaking to you again in the very near future, obviously, when we had a chance to peruse the whole thing. Have you had... Actually, this is Eva's sort of task. Eva, last two questions, please.
It is,
go
yeah.
for it.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Well, do you know, the telephonic link with you is always the highlight of my day, and today is no exception.
Well, good. There you go. And?
And will we be hearing again from you soon, hopefully?
Yeah, I think very soon, actually, which is lucky for me.
Well, we always like to ensure that if we're going to promote a book, you know, there are certain radio programmes up and down the country, they'll do like one quick slot, etc. No, we like to ensure that you get the full value for the whole process, really, into sort of work for the whole
greatly,
process.
Greatly valued from this end, I can tell you. Thank you very much.
Up next, yes, The Stig.
Thank you.
most important purchases you're ever likely to make is that of the automobile. And whether it's a used automobile or a new automobile and so on, it's still an interesting and challenging time. New research has revealed that over a third of possible car buyers won't meet a buyer at their own house, or indeed car sellers, yet just over a quarter have actually bought a second-hand car without having test driven it. Now, to address the shocking statistics and provide us with some sage words of advice, we're delighted to welcome a dynamic duo, the wonderful Perry McCarthy, the original Stig, of course, from Top Gear. Good morning, Perry.
Hey, Alex.
And the equally fabulous managing director of Sell Car, that'll be the legendary Mark Rogers. How are you, Mark?
Good morning, Alex. I'm good, thank you.
Mark, if we can come to you first, in terms of this process of selling cars and so on, I mean, that notion of not taking a test drive and just buying it on the basis of, well, it looks good, that seems bizarre.
Indeed. It's a growing trend as well due to the online, the growth in online business. But yes, certainly in terms of used cars, it wouldn't be advised.
I mean, I know, Stig, when you were in the midst of the joys of Top Gear, etc., of course, when it was good, some might well say, quite rightly so, you would have worked through this whole process. But were you ever tempted to actually just say, yeah, I'll buy that one there, I won't bother test driving it, I'll just go for it?
I'm a disaster at buying cars, Alex. Absolute disaster. Or selling them as well. That's why I kind of generally leave it to other people. The great thing about Top Gear was that whatever car I was driving, I could hand it back to them even after anything I've done to it. So one tip I give the general public, don't buy a car I've owned.
So this research that looked at over 2,000 motorists who've bought and sold a car, 35% would meet a buyer somewhere other than their own house. This sounds rather like one of those spy thrillers from the 1960s, actually, where you say, I have a car to be sold. Meet me at so-and-so, so-and-so house. Is it just a case of we feel insecure when we're going to purchase a car?
I mean, personally, it's a matter of personal taste, isn't it? But I actually don't like people coming to my house on business. So I prefer to have any transaction away from the house itself. Other people might have more dubious motives if they're trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes when they're selling a car. This is, again, you know, for me, why I see the beauty of the really the process of sellcar.co.uk is to turn around and say, right, you know, if you want to go online and get something for your car, they'll give you a pretty accurate value as long as you're able to provide a fairly accurate description. And then they'll, you know, you make an agreement, they come over and get the car, and that's the deal done. And for me, that simplifies a transaction, and I'm all in favour of it for my own personal taste anyway.
From the Department of Moral Obligations, we see that 14% in the East Midlands at least have lied when selling their car, of which 45% have said that they just wanted to get the sell. Is it a case of caveat emptor, buyer beware, Mark?
Yes, I think in on some occasions it is. Obviously, people are trying to maximise the sale price that they get. But in a lot of on a lot of occasions, it's just a nervousness about the product that they're actually selling, a lack of knowledge, and I guess a little bit of defensiveness.
Stig, from the point of view of, again, that sort of purchase, because yeah, clearly one often sort of says, well, you could actually go for a second-hand car, used car and so on. I mean, there's the classic line, you wouldn't buy a used car from this particular individual. What are your own personal experiences? Well, you've already said that you're not that confident when it comes to actually purchasing the whole thing. Have you had any particular nightmares where you thought, oh, Lord, what happened then?
Yeah, I've got two major stories. I buy for too much and sell for too little. That's generally the modus operandi of my involvement with cars. So that's every time I feel I pay too much for a car and every time I sell it for too little. But as I say, it's an emotive thing for me with cars, and that's why I kind of really shift over the responsibility to, you know, experts. And especially if one can do it online, it's even better.
Perry, it's this refreshing honesty that's just opening a whole new world for the whole thing. You see, it's wonderful. Mark, in terms of advice for somebody who's looking to actually actually sell their car and so on, I mean, clearly we're bombarded these days with various sort of online solutions. So, oh, we'll sell it here, we'll work through that basis. What's the best way? Is it a case of do your research first to actually find out which markets to actually place your car in to start off with?
I think it depends what you're looking for. I mean, if you're patient and prepared to wait, the private sale option is always going to be an option. You can look at the DVLA recommendations for a private sale there, which would include, obviously, if you're a buyer, making sure that you buy from the individual's home address. If you're looking for a quicker sale, the convenient option and a fair price for your car, then it would be an online car purchasing company like Sellcar.
Mm. And is that the best place to go to actually find out more details? Cellcar.co.uk?
Yeah, you'll find lots of information on the Cellcar website, including our process and indeed advice on the wider market.
Excellent. There we are. The original Stig, of course, and Mark Rogers from Cellcar with some sage advice there in terms of whether you're buying a car, whether you're selling a car, whatever.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
And in some way, William, I think that's actually even more cute than the Steve Wright round of applause that you actually had earlier in the week, of course, on Monday, when you were the star of the big show, as we knew you would be, obviously talking about eggs or anarchy.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoyed it. It was certainly, wonderful speaking to the legend himself. I've always dreamed of, being on Steve Wright in the afternoon. So that it actually happened was, tremendous. I got through it. He broadcast it. What is it? I think 10 million listeners or so.
Almost as many as tune into the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. It's amazing, really. I feel as though in many ways you kind of... Hopefully he managed to get some hints about working on Soho Radio as well, which, you might sort of want to put in a word that, when the Radio 2 contract maybe comes to an end, he could possibly, do a sort of warm-up act for you on Soho Radio.
Well, whatever I can do to help. Excellent. Whatever we can do, broadcasting to the nation...
Precisely. Quick introduction, William, in the studio today, as well as the return of Eva MacDonald, we have the fabulous Lucy Laville, exactly. Yeah. Senior lecturer in the Faculty of Business and Law at Leeds Metropolitan, over 15 years' experience in public relations and marketing. Generally an all-round wonderful person, it has to be said. But as yet, Lucy, I'm not sure whether you've picked up your copy of Eggs or Anarchy, have you?
I haven't, actually. Morning, William. No, I haven't. Look forward to hearing about it from you this morning.
It is the must buy for all Christmas presents so far. I've already downloaded some of the material from that well-known online website for various other things. It's sensational. I feel William has not just sort of taken the ball, he's knocked it out of the whole sort of area with this. William, would you like to share with us once more about Eggs or Anarchy and how you came up with this idea of how we were so much healthier when we had rationing during the war?
Well, I came across the idea when I was researching my first book, which is The History of Food and 100 Recipes, and I was writing a chapter about rationing in the Second World War. And I'd heard of Lord Woolton. People sort of know of him because of Woolton Pie, which is a rather boring story. And as I sort of dug deeper, I realized that actually there was an extraordinary story here, because Lord Woolton, while he was preaching to the British public not to use the black market, he was actually tacitly consenting to his own agents that they, on the back streets of Cairo and Alexandria, actually used the black market to bring in goods to feed Britain and her colonies. So I sort of dug deeper, and then I realized actually there was a great story here, and I found all of Lord Woolton's unpublished diaries in the Bodleian Library in Oxford. I found all of his family papers, and I sort of put together what I hope is a sort of interesting narrative, using all of these unpublished papers and wrote the story. So it's called Eggs or Anarchy because that was literally the dilemma that we were, often facing. It's very, if a nation isn't fed, we lose morale. And if we starve, what would be the point in winning the war overseas if we lost the war because Britain was in despair and anarchy? I mean, I think it's interesting if you think about it. Britain is always only ever 2 to 3 days away from having a major food crisis, which is why when we have a fuel crisis, for example, the government gets very worried because it's very important to keep the British public fed.
Critical points. William, I've just, whilst you've been speaking there, not only liked but also shared your Hay Festival photograph there, in which we have your good self, author of Eggs or Anarchy, believing the Second World War was not a government victory, it was a Lord Woolton victory. There we are. Important stuff. Lucy, questions for William.
Wow, that's quite a lot of research you managed to uncover. And how interesting. What did you feel overall? Did you feel that it was very hypocritical, or that it was a needs must and therefore you know, he was sort of doing a good public service with what he was doing.
Oh, I mean, he did an extraordinary public service. I mean, he had to battle with Churchill and his cabinet colleagues in order to actually get hold of shipping, because, you know, the same way that today people within government have to battle for budgets for their individual departments, Wilton had to battle to get hold of ships, not to transport troops, but to transport food. He battled with the Ministry of Shipping, who were trying to bring, you know, steel and manufacturing equipment across the Atlantic, and he had to argue that he could bring in food. So he did all, he had all these battles, and he battled personally with Churchill, who was initially quite dismissive of Wilton, because I think a lot of politicians are quite circumspect when it comes to business and being elevated to the peerage in order to be sort of dropped into cabinet. You know, they haven't gone up the greasy pole like politicians have, and I think it's probably similar today. But I think the thing that I really discovered was, Britain wouldn't have been fed if they'd had any old Minister of Food. Lord Wilton was a businessman. He was a self-made millionaire. He'd run a big department store called Lewis's, and he was about to retire when Neville Chamberlain made him Minister of Food in early 1940. So it was that business acumen, and it was his extraordinary commercial nous. I mean, what I unveil in the book is some extraordinary ways that he, for example, would buy and sell futures on the wheat market overseas. He would get on the phone and deal personally with traders. And I think that it really was a victory for Wilton. And what for me is extraordinary is to be able to, you know, hoist the flag for Wilton and make the case that actually he was one of the most vital people during the war, but he's someone whose story has never been told before.
Well done. Absolutely brilliant.
We like to celebrate the best. And I feel in many ways, William, we've followed you through, obviously, from A History of Food in 100 Recipes. You've become a regular Thursday morning correspondent to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. I feel in many ways, I've shared the birth. I've shared the pain. I've shared the agony. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, of course, I've got to write another damn book now.
Well.
You know, you do one and then your agent says, right, what's next? So,
what is next?
Good question. You know, someone was suggesting I write a novel based on the cut and thrust of the London restaurant scene.
Yeah. Well, we could do with
that
some
be
more.
An idea.
Yeah, yeah, some more food detectives. Obviously, we had a good. I think it was Pie in the Sky a few years ago. It was a series that was based on a detective that was based in. He was a chef as well, if memory serves.
Yeah.
With,
so, yep, yep. The great actor who played Uncle Monty.
Yes,
and I,
exactly. Yes, yeah. You're quite right. So yeah, there's a mileage from that. But Eva, are you looking forward to getting hold of a copy of Eggs or Anarchy?
I am. Sounds very interesting.
Everything. I mean, you know, we used to think it was just Waitrose Food that's an interesting magazine to work through. But, you know, since he sort of worked into the Eggs or Anarchy, it's wonderful stuff there. And, of course, you'll be pleased to know, William, as you will have acknowledged, that we at least pronounced the character of Lord Wilton correctly. For a moment, I thought on the other show, you were going to go into Waltons and John Boys, etc. It was very strange, etc.
Well, Wilton, who cares? Right. You know, I mean, the nation knew him as Fred. That's good enough.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The precise, yeah. Which I suppose, from a PR perspective, Lucy, you say, ultimately, just call them Fred. go for it, Eva. Last two questions for William Sitwell, please.
Have you had a good telephonic link with us today?
Any excuse to plug my wares?
Yeah, it's shameless, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, you've got
to
put
it on the midweek morning drive. And also, you know, Alex and I know that sometimes he rings me up, he's got absolutely no idea what to talk about. It's good to have a subject.
Exactly. I know, it's just always important when we can gear the whole thing around that whole perspective. It's great. So that leads to the next one, Eva, which is...
It does, and we'll be hearing again from you soon.
Yeah, the people of Lincoln are calling for it.
They are calling.
Well, right, and we cannot let the people of Lincoln down. That's important. Right. We're there at their behalf. It's public service broadcasting in the
Indeed.
Fullness of time. By the way, William, do you suffer from hay fever?
Occasionally, but I also suffer from occasionally drinking too many pints of claret the morning dry.
Well, you know, we will be talking with Dr. Pixie McKenna with some possible solutions for the hay fever challenge actually in a matter of moments from now. So all this and more on Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren FM.
Court yet, huh? short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there.
An insufferably bright tune for the world in many ways. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince with Summertime. But Lucy, as we were saying a matter of hours ago, actually, hay fever is striking in every sense of the word these days. And your own children occasionally have hay fever challenges.
Absolutely. I think most people probably do at some time in the year, don't they? Because there's so many different pollens and different things that can trigger hay fever.
Absolutely. And to address the issue of why hay fever is such a widespread allergy in Britain, we're delighted to welcome a genuine broadcasting legend, embarrassing bodies, fantastic host, the wonderful Dr. Pixie McKenna. Good morning, Dr. Pixie. How
Hello,
are you?
Hello, good morning. What a wonderful intro.
It's very important. I was do you prefer Dr. McKenna or Dr. Pixie? What would you
like? Dr. Pixie, Dr. McKenna makes me sound much older than I am.
Very nice. I do think there's something wonderful about Dr. Pixie. So let's look at this whole notion of why is it that hay fever has become such a widespread allergy in the British Isles?
It's a big, big problem. So in the last 20 years, the incidence of hay fever has tripled. And by 2030, we're going to have over 30 million Brits with hay fever. So at the moment, we have about 16 million. It's going to skyrocket. So it's a problem not only for today, but it's going to be with us for a long time. And it's thought to be because of the hygiene hypothesis. We're too clean. So we're not exposing ourselves to enough germs and dirt and muck, and therefore we're finding innocuous things like pollen, and our immune system is seeing it as an immune challenge and it's mounting a response, so it's becoming defensive against it. So that's why there is a problem. And you know, it is a real issue, not just for hay fever sufferers, but also for those around them who work with them, who live with them, who go out for dinner with them. It's a problem.
Let's see. Does this resonate with your good self as a mum?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I used to suffer terribly with hay fever. And I remember doing my exams from school and just hardly being able to see the paper because my eyes were streaming. And now my poor daughter's doing her GCSEs and she's exactly the same. Going camping, you know, lots of friends want to go camping and to festivals, and she just is traumatised at the thought of going because she just knows she'll be in a terrible state. And I remember that as well. It's such a horrible thing to have, isn't it?
It is a real problem. And this piece of research, supported by Stérimar nasal spray, found that over half of hay fever sufferers literally dreaded May and June, because those are the peak times in terms of grass pollen. So presumably that's what your daughter doesn't like. And you know, they dread it, and they realise that it has an impact on their friends and family. And interestingly, you mentioned doing exams. There is some research to say that hay fever sufferers they struggle a bit more in exams because of either the medications they take due to side effects, so they might be drowsy because of antihistamines, or actually just their symptoms. You know, if you're constantly rubbing your eyes or your nose, it has an impact when you're trying to read your paper. So you've got to get her a massive, massive, massive pair of celebrity-style shades and get her to wear them walking into school.
Right, yes, so that she's sort of protecting herself in advance. And
exactly.
Because just taking antihistamines all the time seems a bit of a shame, because you're also probably not helping your immune system either, because you're boosting it or you're suppressing it, aren't you? I don't know if longer term you do get more used to all the pollens around you.
I suppose longer term you become more tolerant of antihistamines if you take them on a regular basis. Mm. But also you're not really doing anything in terms of the actual pollen. So the idea behind using barriers, using the sunglasses, wide-brimmed hats, a little bit of barrier cream on the inside of your nose really, really helps. Mm. And then thinking about something such as a natural seawater-based spray like Stérimar to squirt up your nose and to wash out all those pollens that you've trapped over the course of the day. Because those are the things, when she's sitting in the exam, they're going to be in there lingering and irritating her. So that's a really good option for her if she hasn't tried that.
I will certainly pass that on to her. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
She's got to jump in the shower when she comes home
for the
evening, wash her hair, wash all the pollen off her, and not throw her clothes on the floor, because they'll be covered in pollen as well. And it's like getting into bed with pollen. So she's got to do all those. She's got to keep mum happy. Take the clothes off the floor, but don't hang the clothes out to dry.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes, I'd love to get the washing out on the line, but probably that isn't helping either,
no.
Is it?
Extraordinary. Lucy, you shared with us something yesterday that suggested that once you'd given birth, all your allergies were passed on to your daughter.
Well, yes, I didn't really want to, didn't know if that was appropriate, but yes, I used to suffer terribly, and then I had awful hay fever when I was pregnant with her, and I haven't really suffered much since then, but she's become a terrible sufferer of it, so I think I passed it on to her, and she's cured me, but it's a bit dramatic to way to get over your hay fever.
It is a bit of a dramatic way to get over your hay fever. It's an expensive way to get over your hay fever as well. Yeah, some people see a huge improvement in their symptoms during pregnancy. Some people see no change whatsoever, and then others see a deterioration. And then once they've given birth, they seem to either be back to square one or it can completely disappear.
Yeah.
Eva, the other end of the scale, have you sort of had hay fever challenges?
No, I don't. Luckily, I don't suffer with hay fever at all. My brothers do. But no, I haven't ever done so. I hope I won't.
Is this something that can emerge? Can it re-emerge as we go through life, or can it just suddenly flare up and say, "Oh,
yeah"? You're never, you know, never say never. You're never really out of the woods when it comes to, excuse the pun, but when it comes to hay fever, that's for sure. It can occur at any point in your life. You're much more likely to get it if you're atopic, so if you suffer eczema, other types of allergies, or asthma, or if you have that gene running through your family tree, but anyone is vulnerable.
And in terms of natural remedies, would they be preferable as far as possible, as opposed to, as we mentioned, obviously using pharmaceutical cures and so on?
I suppose what happens is we have two types of patients. You've got patients like me who don't want to use any drugs. So rather than using any drugs, I put up with my symptoms and I annoy everyone because I sneeze all day or I snort or I snore or, you know.
It's your way, Dr. Pixie. It's important. You know, just go for another take, that's all.
I need to go to my own show, I think. And then you have other people who just use pharmaceutical treatments and they don't do any of the practical things. You know, they think, well, the drugs will work and I won't do anything practical. So the idea behind using, you know, natural seawater based sprays like Stérimar is that you're irrigating your nasal passages, you're getting rid of the pollen, and in some cases, depending on what you use, you're encapsulating that little pollen grain and you're making it inactive. So you can use them on their own or you can use them with your conventional treatments like your nasal steroid sprays.
I feel in many ways we've had a privileged insight into the ways to actually cope with hay fever and so on. But is there a website that you'd recommend, Dr. Pixie, people can go to if they want to find out further information?
Absolutely. So stérimarnasal.co.uk. And also I'm doing a Q&A at 1 o'clock today on hay fever on that on their Facebook page. So if you've got any questions, then please send them in.
So they're at Stérimar, S-T-E-R-I-M-A-R, in terms of that, hay fever. We'll take you through that whole system. You can go online as well from that perspective. Sadly, I won't be joining you in the online thing because I'll be at a meeting, and I think, you know, probably wouldn't be appropriate, really, Lucy, would it, to sort of just go online in the midst of the meeting? You know, very important. It's an academic thing, but hey, work through that process. Dr. Pixie, it's been fabulous touching base with a good self. Have you had an interesting link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have. It's been great.
A round of applause for Dr. Pixie.
Yay!
Beautiful stuff.
Very lovely up there in the East Midlands.
Well, that's what we like to be. And hopefully we'll be able to join you again in the very near future and keep us appraised of matters to do with life and other things.
Of course, of course.
Hurrah!
Summer breeze haunting my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine.
And so we thank Tessa Snart from just outside Peterborough, of course, Richard Fitzwilliams for his wonderful film reviews, Ian Lennox, and of course Christine Webber, together with the director of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Jane Southall, and Dr. Pixie, we just heard of, from William Sitwell, needless to say, and the Stig, and Lucy Laval. Lucy, have you enjoyed your first experience of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I've loved it. What a great way to start the day. Well, lots of energy
exactly.
in the studio here.
Keep on going. And Eva, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Back with us next week?
I will be, yes.
Hurrah! The week before, of course, the Lincolnshire show starts in earnest, and you'll also be able to talk about your Elton John experience tomorrow.
Oh, oh wow. Yes. I'll
wonderful, wonderful stuff. Siren continues with magical material, which goes around to Squagglebox, and later on, of course, we've also got Sound and Nick's Vision Volume 18 just after 7 o'clock. A whole heap of other goodies as far as Siren is concerned, Lincoln's first community radio station. Lucy, hopefully we'll be able to connect with you again, possibly as a telephonic correspondent from Leeds.
I'd love that, and it will be a real privilege. Thank you.
And now we've sorted out the hay fever issue. All's well with the world. Excellent stuff. Thank you, dear listener. Keep on keeping on. We're out of here now to head off to all sorts of exciting things. Can we say bye-bye?
Goodbye. Bye. Have a lovely day.